Today's daf, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is Masechet Sukkah, daf Chof Gimel, and we are holding, at the Mishnah, which starts on daf Chof Beis Amud Beis, to be introduced because of its very special sugya, which has everything to do with Sir Richard. It will be introduced by our Capitan. Go ahead. And so, what happened is, Richie ended up staying in Finland, and here it's Chag HaSukkot. The only place that is reasonable for a skipper to make a sukkah is right there on the top of his boat, fully exposed to those winds of the sea. So the question is that considered to be a kosher sukkah or not? Now, obviously, we could also have this on land, but there would be a different sukkah. There you would make a sukkah in your Winnebago. So you open up your sunroof in your Winnebago, and you put schach down. Now you got yourself a kosher sukkah, right? Now the question is the movability of the sukkah, which was the issue that was raised on the Mishnah that we had on the previous daf. That is not an issue, because over there, the movability was the movability that directly of the schach as to the place that the schach is over on the earth. So you're going to move the schach away, then it's not going to have any kliyas. But over here, moving of the boat is considered... Yes, Richie?
I just wondered if we could use seaweed.
No, so we have a problem with seaweed, because we said before that lettuce is not kosher. And why wasn't lettuce kosher? Even where it wasn't mukshel kabel tumah, because anything that dries up and it disappears is as if it's not there. And that certainly is true of seaweed. So there goes that. Okay. Now, anyway, so the question over here is whether it's some other problem that may make it puzzle. Now, what might that be? So here it says, Hose sukato barosh agala, o barosh hasfina. So you put your sukkah on top of a wagon. You put it on the back of your pickup truck. So you've got a mobile sukkah. And, okay, I don't know, is that a problem, having a mobile sukkah? What about if you put it on a boat? Now, on the surface, it seems to be the same question, because the boat is also a mobile boat. But as we'll see, there are different issues that may be involved with the boat. So the question over here is, obviously, if you hold that we don't need a diras kva, so then the very fact that it's mobile is not going to be a problem. And therefore, it would be kosher. And not only that, you'd be able to get in and out of your sukkah on yontev. There's no chiddush particularly in that, but we're about to introduce a case where there is a problem of coming in and out of your sukkah. And that's why we mention this problem. Because if you made the sukkah as a treehouse, now that sure sounds like a perfect kind of sukkah. Wow. Talking about being part of nature, there we go. We build the sukkah up in a tree. Well, there we got other problems. There our problem is that you're not allowed to be mishtamish be'ilan on Shabbos or on Yontif. So l'chora, you'd have problems with going up. How about if you put your sukkah on the back of a camel? Then you've got another problem. You may be allowed to get in and out of your Winnebago on Shabbos and Yontif. But can you climb up on a camel? Remember that we have a gezerah not to be mishtamish be'ilan and not to be mishtamish be'behema, both of which are based on the same, interestingly enough, on the same issue of shema yitlosh, because it's very likely you take a branch and you want to use it to guide your animal, or as you're climbing up, you'll take a branch. Anyway, so there you've got a problem, because on yontov you can't use it, but it would still be kosher as long as you're not going to be going up onto your sukkah during yontif. Now, let's imagine a case where you've got two walls of your schach are actually in the tree, and one wall of your schach is bidei adam. So in that case, you can easily imagine this case. You've got like a one wall that goes all the way down to the ground. People actually do this very often in treehouses, right? Because you want to have that treehouse supported on the one side all the way down at the bottom, and then you continue building it up so it forms one side of your sukkah. I just want you to know, by the way, we're going according to the approach of Rashi that's over here, Now, Rashi in Shabbos, where we had the same case, was talking about in Shabbos where you supported the schach, and the idea over there was the problem of not using it on Shabbos was because Rashi said over there, because the derech was to put things on top of the sukkah while you're getting your food ready, you put it on top and then you bring it in. Rashi doesn't go that direction at all here. And he's talking about the actual floor of the sukkah. There's a lot of discussion about why Benogea Shabbos Rashi didn't come onto this case. But in any event, in a case where you've got one of these walls is down on the ground and it's a completely normal wall, and the other two are actually the tree. Oshtayim b'dei adam v'achat b'ilan. So in any of these cases, you still won't be able to go up onto that sukkah because we're assuming that you're going to need the sukkah, the tree, to support the sukkah. And therefore, even though there is additional support by the man-made part of it, nonetheless, you're being oyla l'ilan. But suppose you've got three walls of the sukkah, which could then support the sukkah on its own, and you've got one of them is in the ilan, then there'd be no problem. You could even go up on it on Yontif because it's basically capable of standing on its own. And Zaklau. Look, the bottom line is, and this is coming to include even a case that really only have two walls, which are bidei adam, not three. But nonetheless, if they're made in such a way that they could support on their own the sukkah, so if it's yicholah la'amod b'fnei atzma, meaning you could take away the tree and the sukkah would still be there as if nothing happened, so then it's okay. Ve'olam lo b'yantav, you'd even be able to get up on it on yantav because you don't need the tree for the sukkah. Okay, now, who is the author of this Mishnah that says that there's no problem of having that sukkah on the top of a ship, when we say on the top of the ship, what we mean is in a...
We don't see the recording signal.
Oh, gosh. You're right. It would have been nice to say it before. Okay, well, I still have the MP3 recording. So. Okay, so money must nisen. So according to whom would a Mishnah, would the Mishnah be going if it's Matir having a sukkah all the way on the top of the most exposed part of a boat? Rabbi Akiva. Tanya says sukkato b'rosh ha'sfina. Rabbi Gamliel says it's possible. And Rabbi Akiva says, that's fine. They actually had a story together in which Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Akiva were traveling during sukkahs on a ship. Okay. And Rabbi Akiva gets up there, he puts his sukkah up, everything's great, he's going to have a happy sukkah, and he makes his sukkah right there, Barosh HaSfina. And anyway, next day, out comes the storm, and tears the sukkah away into the sea. Says Rabbi Gamliel to Rabbi Akiva, well, my dear friend Akiva, gosh, what happened to your sukkah? Gee, Echan sukkatcha, meaning that I told you so. So you cannot have a sukkah where you have to be choshesh that the wind's going to come along and blow it away. That's not called even a diras kva. Actually, it's a question, is that the entire issue, that it's not even a diras kva? But pashas, that's the problem. So in making a sarcastic comment to Rabbi Akiva, he's bringing out that here, confirmation, experimental confirmation, forget about that sukkah. Now, it's interesting that there's a completely different approach that has nothing to do with the requirement for kva. What it has to do with is, as we're going to see, a sukkah that is not ro'i for all 7 days of sukkahs, is that considered to be a kosher sukkah? So if it's not going to be omed normally for 7 days, it could be that that's the problem. That's how some rishonim learn. So that even though it's not inherently that it's not kavua, it's just that under normal weather conditions, this is not the sukkah you're going to be using all 7 days because it's going to blow away. And therefore, it's not kosher on any of the days. But that would be dependent on the sukkah that we're going to have later about a sukkah ru'ya l'shiva. Omer Abaye. Now, the machlokas over here, I just want you to understand that Everybody. Rabbi Gamliel agrees. And Kuliyama, I mean, Rabbi Akiva agrees with Rabbi Gamliel, Hecha de'ini yecholah la'mod barok b'tzuyah de'abasha. Lav klumi. Question is, look, this is an unusual case because in the sea, it's going to be exposed, completely exposed to the wind. And it's because of that that you've got a lot more to worry about in a ruach mitsuya on a boat in the open sea than you would about a question about a sukkah in next to your house, right? So the question is like this. Suppose the sukkah is perfectly normal sukkah. Had it been in a different place, it would have been kosher. How about if, even if it were in a different place, it wouldn't have been kosher? That's the question that I'm telling you nobody disagrees with. If the sukkah would not be able to be made in a standard wind on dry land, that is bichlal not considered to be a sukkah. Again, the machlokas, it's not even a diras kva, possibly, or it's certainly not a sukkah that could be called a sukkah for Shiva. So then for sure it's no good. If it can be omed even in a ena mitsuya diabasha, you have a big storm on the dry land, and you are on the dry land, then everybody is made that that is kosher. Kulei alma, that is for sure lo pli'idik shira. Because if it's that strong, that is considered to be a kviyas of the sukkah. The problem is that it's yecholah lamod baruch mitzuyah diyabasha. The case we're talking about is had this sukkah been on the dry land, we could have assumed that it is a normal sukkah. But it cannot be omed b'ruach she'ena metzuya de'yabasha, which is the standard ruach in the yam. That is a ruach metzuya in the yam. On the yabasha, that would be considered to be a violent wind. So that's the question. Rabbi Gamliel tends in the direction, remember he was one of those shitas that hold, that we go in the direction of sukkas diras kvabina, which means that it actually has to stand up here. And given any cholala mod baruch mitzuya diyam, which is where it is, because it's on a boat, lav klumi. Whereas Rabbi Akiva says, a sukkah is enough if it's a diras arai. This satisfies the general requirements of diras arai, because it's yecholala mod baruch mitzuya diyabasha. And therefore, even under these circumstances, once we define the sukkah, it's kosher. Note that this idea of defining the sukkah has been with us in many subtle ways throughout, because we've even allowed you to use lavud, for instance, to close up the top of the sukkah, even though there's a hole there. I mean, lavud isn't kosher schach, is it? But the idea is that we define the sukkah. Having once defined the sukkah, then the question of whether in this particular location you've got a hole in the roof, you don't have a hole, that's defined by the general halachas, right? We had the same question that was a machlokas we discussed earlier about if the sukkah has got a equal amount of chama and tzel on top. So we said, okay, but that's not kosher because it's going to spread to the bottom. So we had this question, is it prorated spread? You know, so like if it's got a little bit more tzel than chama on top, but not enough to make up for the 20 amas that are underneath it, and which is going to be a lot of spread. Do we look at each case as the case is? And therefore, we would have to say, okay, well, we have to analyze precisely. Let's look at the bottom of the sukkah, which is not the mashmat of the sugya, right? The mashmat of the sugya is, as long as on top you've got chamata meruba mitzelata, you don't have to worry about the fact that maybe your sukkah is very tall and therefore it's going to spread. The same thing is true over here with what Rabbi Akiva is saying. This sukkah, under other circumstances, would be perfectly okay. Same thing is true over there. This sichuch is perfectly okay. Now, you happen to put it in a place where, in fact, as it spreads, it'll spread on the bottom. Okay, fine. I mean, that's your particular circumstances. But you have a sukkah. So the sukkah is kosher. This is what Rabbi Akiva is saying over here as well. This satisfies the requirements of the sukkah. It's made in a ruach mitzuya diyabasha. And you're telling me because I moved it to the yam, therefore it's not a sukkah. That I don't hold. Because given the yecholah lamod baruch mitzuya diyabasha, it is kshera as is. And then we said, if you make your sukkah on the back of a camel, okay, and is that all right? Is that also machlokas? Masi simani is Rabbi Meir. And it's not clear what the basis of the machlokas is. Rabbi Meir is the one who says, the Tanya, if you build your sukkah on the back of a behemah, Rabbi Meir is machsh and Rabbi Yehuda is posel. What reason is there for posseling? My time at Rabbi Yehuda. Omar kro chaga sukkot ta'aselecha shiv'at yamim. So this was the question, whether this idea of requiring a sukkah, that is yichola aru'uya l'shiv'a shma sukkah, but a sukkah she'ena ru'uya l'shiv'a lo shma sukkah, did that also figure in the case of the boat? Or was the main issue over there only the issue of whether it's considered to be kavua bichlal? Okay, but in any event, you can see how the two might be related. Or when we said money masnisin, we're referring only, no, wait a minute, the part of the mission that says Arosh Sfina, money masnisin, and then separately we're saying money masnisin of the one who says that it could be on the back of an animal. And over here, the question is that since you can't use the sukkah, which is on the back of your camel on Shabbos, or on Yontov, according to most, it's not a kosher sukkah for all 7 days. So even though now it's Chol HaMoed, you say, well, I understand, what's my problem? Why can't I go up to my sukkah? You can, but you're not going to be able to go up to your sukkah tomorrow. And therefore, your sukkah can't be used the entire Sukkot. By definition, there's always going to be a day of not usability on this sukkah. So because of that, it's not a sukkah, it's a real yeshiva. This is a question, by the way. If the makor of the iser, of its not being able to be used for Shiva, is a derabbanan, does that pasul the sukkah d'oraisa? Because in reality, I'm not going to be able to use the sukkah because the derabbanan is in the way. This is a general question that we've discussed many times. Big machlokas we've shown him, whether the din derabbanan defines the reality vis-a-vis the d'oraisa. So that, in effect, you're telling me I can't use it l'shiva because, for whatever reason, maybe one of these days it'll be blown down by a wind. Fine, so then the same thing is true. It's being blown down by the Issur d'Rabbanan. It's a practical issue. Or do we say, but the fact is, if you had gone up on it on Yontev, you would have been Yotzei. So there's nothing that's inherently wrong with the sukkah. Okay, this is part of that overall very complex sugya. There's a lot of discussion about. But in any event, over here, certainly, midrabbanan, it's not kosher. It's a sukkah ruhi l'shiva, and therefore, tainis Rabbi Yehuda, it's not kosher. So Rabbi Meir, on the other hand, says, but I don't understand. It's only a problem of the rabbanan. And if I went up on it, it would be okay. It's the rabbanan of the gazer bas, so we don't look at that as a problem when it comes to the issue of a sukkah ruhi l'shiva. Now, we have another question, interesting question, which we had, remember, back in Erevin. And we've had this actually numerous times. Whether bichlal, an animal, is suitable to use as mechitza. Now, this is a different issue. Over here, we're talking about not the mechitza, we're talking about using it as the basis of your sukkah. So, asa alev eima dofen l'sukkah. So suppose you use an animal as a side of the sukkah. Rabbi Meir says it's possible. Rabbi Yehuda is kosher. Rabbi Meir's shita is that kol davar sheyesh bo ruach hayim, anything that's alive cannot be used for any of the issues that are mechitza oriented. So you can't use it as a wall of a sukkah, the dofen lo dofen the sukkah. You can't use it as a lechi for a mavui. You can't use it as the famous case of Pasin Lebeiraot. Remember Pasin Beiraot, where you've got a well, and it's just in the middle of a road, and now you're going to need to get water out of that well on Shabbat, and the well itself is a Rishos HaYachid, and you're standing in an area which is not in that Rishos HaYachid, so it's a Carmelite, or maybe Rishos HaRabim. In any event, the Rabbanan were matur using Arba Diyumdin. So you use four wide enough poles to give you a tefach by a tefach on each side, so that you outline the area where you're going to be using it, right? Can you use an animal at each one of those four corners and make that your diyumdin? Says Rabbi, no, you cannot. So it's not pasin l'beiraot. You cannot, when it says you cannot, it doesn't mean you cannot. It's just that if you put an animal as a grave marker, as a cover over a grave, it's not going to have the din of a golel v'dofek, which is the mitame. This is not really a goal of a dofek, so it's not going to be mitame. And mishum Rabbi Yosi Aglilis, you can't use it to give your wife a get and write a get on the skin of the animal And this is a direct delivery of a get, you know. So the moment that she receives the animal, she receives the get, you can't use it for that either. So what's the shvara of your Rabbi Meir, that something that's alive can't be used for a sukkah? Why not? Abaye says, because, look, I mean, maybe it'll die, and then you're going to end up with a sukkah that's not 10 tefachim high, and you won't have a sukkah. And in any of these cases, you're relying on it for Yontif or for Shabbos or for carrying, and you won't be able to do anything on Shabbos about it. That's the problem. Rabbi Zera says, well, we have to come on to dying. I mean, the animal might walk away, you know, and just leave you sukkahless. So, is there a difference? Well, let's imagine an elephant. So here we've got an elephant as the site of your sukkah. Now, if that elephant dies, okay, it's still going to be a kosher wall of a sukkah, because even a dead elephant is 10 tefachim high, right? So suppose you tie up the elephant as well. Now the elephant can't even walk away. So what's it going to do? It can't walk away. It can't die away. So in the case where your elephant is tied up, so there everybody agrees that that's perfectly okay according to Rabbi Meir, because even if it was going to die, it still is going to be 10 tefachim high, and it can't walk away. So where would there be a nafkamina between the two approaches of Abai and Rabbi Zera in a case where either you've got an elephant, but it's not tied up, so it might walk away, but it doesn't matter if it dies? So the mandi amar shema tamut, in this case, it's not a problem, because it'll be asara, lo chashina. Lamandi Amar, but according to Rabbi Zera, who holds it, we're worried maybe it'll walk away if it's not tied up. So then we are afraid. But I don't understand, says the Gemara. I mean, like, why are we just arbitrarily making a difference between dying or walking away? I mean, isn't there an issue of Lamandi Amar Zera Shema Tamut? I mean, isn't it very likely that it'll walk away? Like, why are we mentioning the Shema Tamut? I mean, that's a pretty far-fetched possibility. Last I heard, an animal walking away from a place where it's getting a little bored, sitting around here for 7 days, is a lot more likely that it's suddenly going to have a heart attack and collapse, right? So shouldn't there also be the chashash of Shema Tivrach? I mean, you're making it seem like these are two totally different approaches, and if you held Shema Tamut, you don't have to worry about Shema Tivrach. That's sort of weird, isn't it? Yeah, I guess you're right. Okay, so let me restate this then. So if the elephant was not tied up, everybody would agree that it's not kosher, because it might walk away. The question is, if the behemoth, a normal animal of normal size, it is tied up. So if you're worried about it's walking away, so okay, can't walk away. But if you're afraid it's going to die, tying it up is not going to help. So because if it collapses, it's going to leave the sukkah with less than 10 tefachim. And if your only problem is it's going to walk away over here, it can't walk away because it's tied. Well, okay, but I mean, can I ask you the other direction also? I mean, if we're concerned about Shema Tivrach, shouldn't we also be worried that it's going to die? No, that's the whole point. Rabbi Zera says, look, death is not something that's going to happen more than once in this animal's life. Amazing. We've never found a case where an animal died more than once. Masha'en kein, it happens very often that it walks away every day, 10 times a day. So which one do you think is more likely occurrence? Okay, so that's the goof of the point. Rabbi Zera holds, Rabbi Meir wouldn't be choshesh that it's going to drop dead, but he is choshesh that it could walk away. Ask the Gemara, but isn't there another problem? I mean, you're using an animal. I don't know what size animal, but it's got to be at least 10 tefachim, 7 plus tefachim, right, in order to be kosher. But if it's that high, then it's got 3 tefachim under its belly. Now, I thought we said that a mechitza that can be penetrated by a gedi bevat rosh is not a mechitza. So, I mean, couldn't a little kid run under the behemah and get into your sukkah? So it's not kosher mechitza anyway. So what about the revachah de beni beni? What about the area between its legs? No, obviously, you'd have to fill that area up. So David Abu Tzvedafna. So you use palm trees or bay leaf trees. Vidilma Rava. Maybe it's going to lie down, you know, and then it won't be 10 tefachim. Well, it's talking about over here that you tied it up with these ropes to make sure that even if it falls asleep, it doesn't fall down to the ground. Wait a minute. So then if you tied it up, so then even if it drops dead, it's still going to stand. So then I don't understand if that's the case. So the Mandem Rekzera Shema Tamut, so who cares? Hamaticha Ba'ashalim Ila'el. It's still held up with these big ropes. Ah, but you see, there might be times that this animal, even when it stood up, it was only 7 tvachim plus a little bit. It was within 3 tvachim of the roof of the sukkah, and that's what made it kosher. Obviously, it could be 15 tvachim if the only reason would have been that it's going to fall away. But over here, we're worried about it not being a kosher mechitza. So that would only be if it's within 3 tvachim samuch lagak. And now it was perfectly kosher. You tie it up, and you're thinking, okay, it'll still be perfectly kosher even if it dies. But you see, it won't be. Because if it was only a mashu more than shiva tvachim, so then kivan demaita kavtza, in death, it's going to start shrinking. And as it shrinks, you won't even realize that it is now, it lost that mashu, and now you've got a non-lovud connection to the chach. And lavadaites, because of that, we're worried that you can't rely on it. Okay, so now basically we're saying that the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda is only nogea one issue. Do we need to worry about its dropping dead or not? So according to Rabbi Meir is worried, yes. Look, Rabbi Meir is always more worried than others, right? Because he's chayish lemiyuta. So, I mean, this seems to make sense. Rabbi Meir would be the one who says, you have to worry that it's going to die. And Rabbi Yehuda is the one who says, you don't have to worry that it's going to die, and therefore it'll make a nafkamina if it's tied up and so on. The problem is that Abaye himself said the exact opposite in terms of the shittas of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. How could you say this? Umi Omar Abaye, that Rabbi Meir is the one who's worried that something might die and Rabbi Yehuda is not. It says exactly the opposite in the Mishnah in Gittin. The halacha over there is like this. Bat Yisrael, who marries a kohen. Now she's allowed to eat truma, right? Her husband takes off on a business trip overseas. Is he still alive or not? I mean, in those days, you go on a boat, you have no idea for 6 months whether he made it to the other side, whatever. Can she continue to eat truma on the assumption that her husband is alive or not? So it says in the Mishnah, Ochelet b'truma b'cheskat shu kayam. She can continue to eat truma. So the Gemara over there in Gittin asked an obvious question, which is the reason the whole sugya is in Gittin. So it says over there, if somebody gives a get to his wife, and he says, so this would be the same case, a guy is going away, he doesn't want his wife to fall to Yibum if they don't have any children, she won't know whether he's dead or alive, so he gives her a get, and the get is made in such a way that it should go into effect 1 moment before I die. So he says, Sha'a achat kodem mitati. And the halacha over there in the Braita is she has to stop eating truma now, even if her husband is right in front of her, because she may be divorced. Maybe he'll die within the hour. And he said the get should be chal an hour before I die. Or even if sha'a doesn't mean an hour, it means a minute before I die, an instant before I die. He may die this minute. So because of that, she cannot eat truma. So you see that you are chayish lemisa, right? And in the Mishnah about achilas truma, it says that we're not chayish. I'd explain that. And Abaye, believe it or not, Abaye was the one who answered the contradiction over there in Gittin. And he said, what's the problem? Horebi Meir, delo chayish lemisa. Oh, my God. One is going to leave it to Rabbi Meir, and that's the part that says in the Mishnah that he went overseas, you don't have to worry that he dies. That's Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir is not worried about someone dropping dead. Mashenke in the Baraita that says that she has to stop eating truma immediately, that's Rabbi Yehuda, the exact opposite of what he said over here. Oh my gosh. And the Gemara even goes to prove that that's the truth, that these are the way that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda hold. Because we find in the Braita, so this is also a case we've had dozens of times, right? So here's the case again. Halokeach yayim ibein akutim. So a guy is buying, it's Erev Shabbos, it's right before Shabbos. He does not have any wine. And he doesn't have a cup. He's traveling on the road. So what's he going to do? All he finds is wine. This was before the Gezeira that made the Kutim like Goyim L'chol Davar. So he buys wine from Kutim. That's even worse than buying wine as Demai from an Amoret, because the Kutim, you have to worry about even Truma. Maybe they didn't take off because they were a Makbet on Lifnei Iver, even if they're Makbet for themselves. Fine. So then he's got to take off Truma Gedola. Then he has to take off all of the Seder of Meisers. Fine. So what he does is he says like this. The first two lug out of these 100 are that I'm going to be, when I get to a place that I can be mafresh it, when I get to that place, I will be mafresh. So they are currently immediate, because I can't do this on Shabbos, because I can't take off Trumas and Meisers on Shabbos. So they are now considered to be Truma, even though I don't know where they are. But this is relying on Breira, right? When I will find out what they are, that's what they are now. Okay, good. So then those first two, Echad B'Chamishim, in other words, those are Truma Gedayla. Now 10 Lugin are Meiser Rishon. And now 9 Lugin are Meiser Sheni. And now you go and you're Mechal all the Meiser Sheni onto a coin. And you can drink it right now. Just be careful to leave over the amounts that you said you're going to. And we're going to be Semech on Breira. And so says Rabbi Meir that that's okay. But Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, they all say you're not allowed to do this. Why? Because how do you know that the bottle that you're carrying it in, or the flask, obviously they were carrying in those days, so the flask that you're carrying it in might rip and all the wine spills, and then you end up not having ever been mafresh. So how can you rely on that? So that means that Abaya was absolutely right. Rabbi Meir does not worry about things like the ripping of the flask, and therefore he would not worry about the ripping of this guy's left ventricle. And therefore he's not worried about the guy dying, whereas Rabbi Yehuda does. I mean, it's certainly more likely that somebody's going to die than that necessarily something that you could take care of. I mean, you can keep this this flask forever if you're careful with it. You can't keep a human forever, no matter how careful you are of it. So apparently Rabbi Yehuda, who is worried about the breaking of the flask, is certainly going to worry that the guy's going to die. And Rabbi Meir, who doesn't care, so he maybe doesn't care about the guy dying anyway. Okay, bottom line, Abaya himself says, it's crazy, Abaya himself says that Rabbi Meir is dafka, the one who says, you don't have to be chayash l'misa. And he brings a raya from this case. And Rabbi Yehuda is the one who does. And over here, when he talks about the sukkah, he says, Rabbi Meir is the one who would say that you can't use a behema as your dofana sukkah because it might die. But Rabbi Yehuda says it's kosher because you don't. Now, can you explain that? That's a problem. Okay, so obviously we had this whole thing wrong. Okay, fine. What we said about what Abaya talked about in Gittin, you know that he said one goes like Rabbi Meir, one goes like Rabbi Yehuda. We got it backwards. The thing that confused us was this thing about Lokech Yayin Mibein HaKutim, which actually has nothing to do with the issue, as we'll see in a moment, but we said it wrong. It was Rabbi Meir that Rabbi said. One is Rabbi Meir, that is the Braisa that talks about the get a moment before I die. That's going like Rabbi Meir. It says she has to stop drinking, eating Truma now. Whereas the Mishnah, who says if her husband went on a business trip, she could allow to continue to Truma, that's Rabbi Yehuda, who is not Chayesh Lomisa. And over there, Abaye actually was bringing our Mishnah as the basis, or the Braisa about our Mishnah as the basis of his explanation of the Gemara Mishnah in Gittin. Not the thing about the Lokeach Yayim Bein HaKutim. And he brought the brighter that said, Asala Behema Dofen Lesuka, Rabbi Meir Posel, Rabbi Yehuda Machshir. And Abaya said, see, Rabbi Meir is Posel because he's afraid the animal's going to die. And Rabbi Yehuda's Machshir, and he's not worried. That explains our case in Gittin, which also, in one case, it says the guy went on a business trip, you don't have to worry that he's dead. And the other one says, if he gives a get a minute before he dies, you do have to worry that he's dead. And that explains it the same way that we explained here the difference between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda in terms of the wall of the sukkah. Now, the question is, okay, but how do I square that with the whole issue about Lokeach Yayim Mibein HaKutim? So now we've introduced this wild card. So now it's a kasha to Rebbe Meir, or the Rebbe Meir, no? I mean, if Rebbe Meir's not worried that the flask is going to split, why is he worried that the guy's heart is going to split? So isn't that a contradiction? Says Rebbe Meir, no, because it turns out that people always die. Remarkable coincidence. So Misa Shchicha. But why should, you can buy yourself an ancient Roman jug that's 2,000 years old. Can't buy yourself an ancient Roman. So that's the difference, okay? So therefore, Mita is Shchicha. Unless you don't take care of it, but you could take care of it. So give it to somebody to watch. You pay somebody to watch this wine and make sure that it doesn't spill. Efshe the Maser Leila Shomer. Okay, fine. That explains the contradiction of Rabbi Meir. It's also a contradiction of Rabbi Yehuda, isn't it? So kasha to Rabbi Yehuda, to Rabbi Yehuda. In the case of the wine, so Rabbi Yehuda says, you know what? It might tear, and then you'll never get around to taking off your trumas and maizos. How can you do that? And yet over here, Rabbi Yehuda says, you don't have to worry about something dying. How is that? Says the Gemara, no, it's nothing to do with that. Rabbi Yehuda is not worried that something's going to happen to the wine container. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with this whole thing because he doesn't hold a breira. So how can you go? The things that I will be taking off, what do you mean will be taking off? As Rashi explains, there is no such thing as will be taking off. You live in a random universe. You might end up, now things look like that, you'll end up being completely different. There's no connection, there's no causal connection between now and then. So what is that? You can't say what will be. At this moment, anything could be. Okay. So therefore, there's no such concept as breira. So he says the whole idea is absolutely absurd. What? What do you mean? He says that his problem is that the wine is going to be spilled out. Lo chayesh Rabbi Yehuda lebekiyas hanod. Of course he is. Look what it says there. It says it beferish. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, they say to Rabbi Meir, how could you allow such a thing to take off the wine from the kutim based on what will be? And what happens if nothing will be? What happens if the wine spills there, huh? Akiva, heichan sukatcha, Rabbi Meir, heichan trumatcha. Iata modesh, shema yibaka, node. Let's say, this is all a great idea, but what about if there is no node? Which turns out that then this guy has been drinking tevel. And Rabbi Meir responds, I'll worry about it when it happens. Why think about what might be? Because why don't you come and discuss it with me when that happens? By then we'll have safely had all of this delicious wine, and then we can discuss it. Okay. Anyway, but it's pretty clear that Rabbi Yehuda is worried that Shemi Baka knows. And you're trying to tell me, no, he's not worried. And that the real reason is because he doesn't hold a Brera. No, you're misunderstanding the whole Brayt, okay? Rabbi Yehuda's problem is Brera. So all that Rabbi Yehuda was trying to show Rabbi Meir is, let's say you even hold a Brera, okay? Now, I understand. You've got this whole... Maybe it's this whole Newtonian universe in which whatever is going to be selected in 24 hours is omed to be selected now. Okay, that's possible. Hey, just got a question for you. Might the bottle break? So then what happened to the brewer? Then there never was any selection. Maybe you want to have a universe in which only breaking bottles are possible, but not changes in the... Whatever you're going to tell me, I'd like to see how you handle that breaking note. Right? To which Rabbi Meir says, okay, because that's exactly the point. When we're talking about the way in which we can assume things currently are, then I work with Breira. You're telling me, and what happens if something changes? Well, when it changes, we'll worry about it. In which case, he's saying something very intelligent. He's not just saying, I'll worry about it when it happens. He's directly addressing the issue about when we would apply Brera as opposed to random events. Random events, fine. Those are black swans. Now you want to talk about what the din is about currently, if it's aimed to be selected, it's aimed to be selected. That's all I'm saying. I'm made to be selected. I'm made to be selected is sufficient. Brilliant.